This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Ida smashes into Louisiana. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Rasa Kay, who's in for Jennifer Koshenka. On this Monday, August 30th, glad you're with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
Hurricane Ida has made landfall as a Category 4 storm. Torrential rain and 150-mile-an-hour winds wiped out power to more than a million customers.
The entire city of New Orleans is without power. Outages extend to Mississippi as well. Some could be without electricity for weeks.
Rockets launched at the airport in Kabul earlier today targeted American troops. Meanwhile, a U.S. drone strike took out a suspected suicide bomber.
And breakthrough COVID cases. Usually they're mild, but not always.
From the beginning, when these vaccines were tested, let's say they were 95% effective at their very best. So from the beginning, we always anticipated that there would be some breakthrough infections. And it is possible that we're seeing more of those as the more transmissible Delta variant is becoming dominant in the U.S.
Emma Goldberg at the New York Times on breakthrough COVID cases. Hurricane Ida, with 150-mile-an-hour winds, barreled into Louisiana yesterday afternoon, hurling torrential downpours and delivering a pounding surf. Much of the shoreline was submerged under several feet of water. The Category 4 storm knocked out power to the entire New Orleans metropolitan area. A million customers in total were in the dark. Mayor LaToya Cantrell.
The plant that provides power to Entergy New Orleans was compromised. This plant is not located in Orleans Parish. However, we rely on this plant to ensure that we have power throughout the city.
A tower that transmits electricity collapsed into the Mississippi River. Ida came ashore near Port Fourchon, Louisiana, a hub of the offshore energy industry. Nearly all offshore Gulf oil production was suspended. Reuters says a loss of generator power at the Thibodeau Regional Health System Hospital forced medical workers to manually assist respirator patients with breathing while they were moved to another floor. Landfall, by the way, came 16 years to the day after Hurricane Katrina devastated that region. In the final hours before a U.S. deadline to leave Afghanistan, anti-missile defenses intercepted as many as 5 rockets earlier today that were fired at Kabul's airport. The number of U.S. troops at the airport had fallen to below 4,000 over the weekend, with efforts to depart becoming more urgent. Afghan media reports said today's rocket attack was mounted from the back of a vehicle. Yesterday, a U.S. drone strike killed a suicide car bomber who Pentagon officials said was preparing to attack the airport, where U.S. troops are helping people waiting for evacuation flights. Secretary of State Antony Blinken was on ABC's This Week.
The ISIS targets that were taken out involved two individuals who were significant planners and facilitators for ISIS-K.
For all the efforts made by Western powers to evacuate as many people as possible, at least one report says tens of thousands of desperate Afghans face being left behind. A somber day at Dover Air Force Base in Delaware. The remains of 13 service members killed in the suicide bombing in Afghanistan last week returned to U.S. soil yesterday. President Biden participated in what's officially known as a dignified transfer ritual and met with families of the fallen troops, whose remains were carried off an aircraft in flag-draped transfer cases. 11 of the transfers were witnessed by reporters, with the two others conducted in privacy at request of family members. Navy hospitalman Max Soviak of Ohio was among those killed. He was remembered by his electrical technology teacher at Edison High School.
Max was good for pulling shenanigans and liked to get other people to laugh. And that's what I would want people to know about him.
11 Marines, one Army soldier, and a Navy corpsman died in a suicide bombing outside Kabul's airport 4 days ago. Troops in military fatigues wearing white gloves carried the transfer cases to vans. The most common age among them was 20. Start fall with everything to do business better during Dell Technologies Labor Day event. Save up to 45% on select business PCs with Windows 10 Pro. Power your workday with savings on Dell servers, monitors, docks, and other accessories, plus free shipping on everything. Do more with modern devices and Windows 10 Pro. Call 877-ASK-DELL for a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL for business specials during Dell's Labor Day event. Thanks for being with us. As we've told you, there's a wave of Americans falling sick with COVID, even though they are fully immunized in what are known as breakthrough infections. Public health experts continue to believe that breakthrough infections are relatively uncommon and rarely result in severe illness or hospitalizations. But as the more transmissible Delta variant becomes dominant, rising numbers of breakthrough cases are being reported, although most are mild. Examples from Emma Goldberg, reporter at the New York Times. Emma, what do we know?
So we have been hearing more and more about breakthrough infections in the news. And what's important to say right up front is that public health experts do continue to believe that these are relatively uncommon, and even more important, that they rarely result in severe illness or hospitalization. And what's important to remember is from the beginning when these vaccines were tested, let's say they were 95% effective. At their very best. So from the beginning, we always anticipated that there would be some breakthrough infections. And it is possible that we're seeing more of those as the more transmissible Delta variant is becoming dominant in the U.S.
Mm. And as part of that, too, the efficacy, I guess, of the vaccines initially starting to wear off, making us potentially more susceptible.
Right. And we are hearing from the administration that people are likely going to be getting booster shots if they got the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines in the coming months.
Yeah. You spoke with a couple of families who have gone through this and experienced the breakthroughs. You opened, for example, your story with, I think it was a mother-daughter combination from Anchorage, Alaska, right? They traveled to Houston for an event. Explain what happened.
Exactly. So this was a mother and daughter who I spoke with, and they were both vaccinated. They had received their Pfizer shots months earlier. So when they made this trip to Texas, they were not particularly concerned. But that being said, they did spend time in a hotel room with family members there who were unvaccinated. And they actually had an uncanny moment where one of them made this comment to the family members saying, "You can take your masks off, but you have to promise to get vaccinated." Sure enough, the next morning they were on their way home to Alaska, and they got a call that one of the relatives who they'd been with had tested positive for COVID-19. Shortly after, they both came down with breakthrough infections.
Oh, man.
So we're seeing that cycle in which it is, you know, the unvaccinated who are continuing to drive surges and infections in the population.
We're speaking with Emma Goldberg, journalist at the New York Times. Her piece is called "Breakthrough COVID Cases: Uncommon and Often Mild, But Not Always." How about that? Not always. What's happened with some of these folks?
Yeah. So, you know, public health experts are continuing to stress that for the most part, people who are getting breakthrough infections are having mild cases. That being said, I spoke with a woman, Elena Carey Fair, in Texas, whose father was vaccinated with Johnson & Johnson several months ago. In June, he tested positive for COVID, and he was then hospitalized, and he was ultimately given a tracheotomy. So, you know, that is one of the cases in which it's more severe. Her father is 64 years old. He ended up having to be transferred to a long-term care facility. The good news is this week he came home. And so what she stressed to me is that ultimately, you know, we are seeing the vaccines working. Who knows what would have happened if he hadn't had the vaccine?
Yeah.
But you know what she said to me was, "I hate that this had to happen to my family." So we're seeing different kinds of breakthrough infections out there, and we wanted to highlight that as part of the piece.
I think it's getting, or it can be difficult at times for folks to keep up with what's happening because there are a lot of moving parts, right? The Delta variant, booster shots, full approval of vaccines, breakthrough infections. What's kind of the guidance right now from federal health officials?
Well, the guidance is it remains that our best defense is vaccinations and masking. So, you know, that's what continues to be really important, is that we know that it's the unvaccinated who are continuing to drive surges in the U.S. And then there's great data from the Kaiser Family Foundation that found that more than 9 in 10 COVID cases that resulted in hospitalization and death had occurred among people who were not fully vaccinated. So vaccination is still the first defense, and also masking, because we know that when you're wearing a mask, it protects you and it protects people around you.
Thanks, Emma. Emma Goldberg at the New York Times. Meanwhile, a new study from the UK shows that the Delta variant more than doubles the risk of hospitalization for the unvaccinated. Infections in the U.S. now average more than 150,000 a day, up 21% the last 2 weeks. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, here's Rasa Kay.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Ida is pummeling southern Louisiana at hurricane strength on a slow, punishing northward slog. A man killed by a falling tree in Ascension Parish, northwest of New Orleans, is the storm's first official fatality, but daybreak will reveal what early reports suggest will be tremendous damage. New Orleans Police Chief Sean Ferguson warns cops will be deployed to prevent looting during the storm.
Without power, that creates opportunity for some, and we will not tolerate that. We will implement our anti-looting deployment to ensure the safety of our citizens, ensure the safety of our citizens' property.
Over a million people in Louisiana are without power.
Number two.
The U.S. presses on with its Afghanistan evacuation ahead of President Biden's Tuesday force withdrawal deadline. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan on Fox News Sunday promised the job will get done, even if it's past that cutoff.
They are not going to be stuck in Afghanistan. We are going to ensure that we have a mechanism to get them out of the country should they choose in the future to come home. The Taliban have made commitments to us in that regard. We intend to hold them to those commitments, and we have leverage to hold them to those commitments.
Number two.
The U.S. carried out another drone strike, killing what it says were ISIS-K suicide bombers Sunday in a vehicle loaded with explosives. At Dover Air Force Base, President Biden met the returning remains of service members who died in a suicide bomber attack while assisting in the evacuation. A four-year-old with no underlying health issues has become the youngest person in California's Riverside County to die of COVID-19. Pediatric COVID hospital admissions nationwide are up more than 500% in the last 8 weeks. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas has met with Israeli Defense Minister Benny Gantz in the West Bank city of Ramallah. According to a statement from Gantz's office, he told Abbas Israel would take measures to strengthen the Palestinian economy, and the two agreed to continue talks. The actor who played the gruff but lovable newsman Lou Grant on TV has died.
If you don't start shaping up, I'm going to have to fire you.
Do you mean that?
No.
Ed Asner originated the role on the sitcom Mary Tyler Moore Show and continued it in a self-titled dramatic spinoff, as well as making his mark as a character actor in countless series and films. Ed Asner was 91.
All right, thank you, Rasa.
Innovation. Resilience. Agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
This portion of the program is brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. The businesses of the future are being built today, and Michigan is where they start. Learn more by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity. The new school year has many families grappling with how busy they want their calendars to be. As classes, sports, and activities resume, the prospect of returning to a jammed schedule makes many parents and children crave the slower pace they kept when so many extracurricular activities were canceled during the pandemic. How to strike the balance from Ellen Byron, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Ellen, explain.
It's a tricky balance every start of the new school year, but this year it really is tricky because a lot of activities that weren't on offer a year ago are starting up now. And so families have to decide for themselves whether to take the plunge and go back to a more pre-pandemic schedule or take another route and try to keep going with the slower pace that a lot of families enjoyed.
Yeah. Well, it did take, I think, some stay-at-home lockdown situations for families to realize, boy, we're nuts with the schedule we keep. And dinners together are pretty nice, right? I think that one family you profiled from Indiana had that.
Yes. I mean, they realized how much unstructured time did for them as individuals and a family. They enjoyed spending time together. They enjoyed the projects that they dreamed up together. And they really liked knowing that when this pandemic life throws curveballs, they're now able to handle them because they are not overcommitted in their schedule.
All right. So you heard from a number of families about how they strike that balance. What do they say?
They have a lot of good tips. And I also spoke with some parenting consultants and some medical professionals. And there is some agreement on step one needs to be a family meeting. It's important, families told me, as well as Catherine Winch of the Mom Complex. That's a consulting firm that really studies moms specifically. It's important to sit down as a family and have each member say what their main priority is. What activity do they most want to do? And then even if you have to guess, fill in a calendar about what that one activity will look like. And then once each person has picked their priority, then the family really has some guide as far as what their life is going to look like this fall. That way, when the other smaller activities or birthday parties pop up, the family as a whole can look at whether or not those lesser priorities fit around the big ones.
Yeah. We're speaking with Ellen Byron, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Her story is called Steps for Keeping Back-to-School Schedules the Right Amount of Busy. What else turned up?
Well, another important reminder is that you know your child best. I spoke with one family in New Jersey, and they were concerned that their son was really missing social interaction. So their approach to this year is to actually do more sports, outdoor sports, so that they feel safe having him do those activities. But they realized that he missed friends, he missed being on a team, and so they are taking that particular path. And then other kids really like a slower schedule. They like unstructured time to do their own thing at home.
Ellen Byron at the Wall Street Journal. 30 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. You know, in November, I'll celebrate 16 years of hosting this show in one form or another. Whenever those kinds of milestones come up, it's special. And Cuts Clothing is having an anniversary of their own this month. It's been 5 years since Cuts founder Steve Borelli decided to create clothing for any and every occasion, like their signature buttery soft Pika Pro Tri-Blend t-shirts and polos, cozy Hyperloop French Terry fabric hoodies, and more. Everything I've worn from Cuts is next-level comfort. I love their stuff, from their polos to their crew sweatshirts, all classics, made modern with custom-engineered fabrics you have to wear to believe. They've created a comfortable fit without compromising on timeless, universally flattering style. If you haven't worn one yourself, it's time to try the only shirt worth wearing. And this week is the perfect time. This month marks the Cuts 5th anniversary. And they're doing it big with two collection drops, a product launch, and a week-long special event. Go to cutsclothing.com/Gordon to get 25% off site-wide during their anniversary sale. That's 25% off site-wide at cutsclothing.com/Gordon.
The news without the nonsense. You're listening to America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Monday, August 30th. Gordon Deal with Rasa Kay, who's in for Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Hurricane Ida strikes Louisiana, knocking out power to a million customers. New Orleans is completely in the dark. Rockets targeted American troops earlier today in Afghanistan. Meanwhile, a U.S. drone strike took out a suspected suicide car bomber. The European Union wants to stop non-essential travel from the U.S. because of the spread of COVID. Peloton launches a new treadmill today with several safety features. Michigan wins the Little League World Series, and bars reserving seats for America's fallen soldiers. We'll have examples in about 20 minutes. Democrats are bracing for intra-party fights over crafting a multi-trillion-dollar package to advance President Biden's agenda. You may recall that the House has adopted a $3.5 trillion spending plan that paves the way for lawmakers to pass the forthcoming legislation without any Republican votes. But the approval came after Speaker Nancy Pelosi was pressured into striking a deal with a group of moderate Democrats.
Naomi Jagoda, tax and budget reporter at The Hill, says Democrats are now expecting further challenges in getting consensus in their caucus as they draft and attempt to advance the spending bill. And that's not the only spending on their plate. Naomi set this up.
Lawmakers are in store for a very busy month in September. The House recently passed a budget resolution, and that allows Congress, the Democrats, to turn their attention to a multi-trillion dollar bill that will include spending on a lot of their priorities, including things like childcare, education, healthcare, steps to address climate change. And they're hoping to pay for some or all of this bill through tax increases on the wealthy and corporations. And under special rules, they can pass this bill without Republican votes. Yeah. But they're still going to need to get almost every Democrat in Congress to support this. So it'll be a challenge.
Right. Are they likely to get all $3.5 trillion?
That's one of the big questions. Prominent moderate Senate Democrats, Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, they have both raised concerns about the $3.5 trillion figure, and the two of them are pretty influential when it comes to negotiations like this. So it's unclear if they'll be able to get the full $3.5 trillion, but on the other hand, progressives really want to hit that figure. There are some, you know, liberal lawmakers who wanted to spend even more than that.
Yeah.
So it'll be a delicate balance.
All right. Jeez. And then it took me a while to realize, like, this is not part of the federal budget, right? I mean, this is above and beyond what might be spent through the traditional budget.
This would be new spending. Yes.
Yeah. It's incredible. And then where are we on the $1 trillion infrastructure bill?
Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, committed to trying to pass that bill by September 27th. That was something that came out as part of a deal with a group of moderate Democrats in the House. But progressives say we need a vote on the big Democratic-only spending bill before we'll vote for the bipartisan infrastructure bill. So it remains to be seen whether by the end of September the infrastructure bill actually passes the House.
We're speaking with Naomi Jagoda, tax and budget reporter at The Hill. Her story is called Democrats Brace for New Spending Fights Over Biden Agenda. How about the role of taxes in all this, I guess, especially with the $3.5 trillion proposal?
Yeah, you know, Nancy Pelosi, many other Democrats would like to fully pay for all of that spending, but actually getting consensus to raise the taxes necessary to offset that amount of spending is going to be tricky. You know, President Biden has proposed a series of ways to increase taxes on the wealthy, on corporations. Some of those proposals have already, you know, some Democrats have already raised some concerns about some of those proposals, particularly on capital gains. So, you know, there will have to be some negotiating and discussions about how exactly to pay for the bill and how much revenue they can actually raise to, you know, pay for the spending.
Yeah. Are there any Republicans in the House that are on board with the $3.5 trillion or no?
No. Okay. This is something that I would not expect any Republicans to support.
Right. And then explain the importance of the timing here, because lawmakers don't want this to stretch into 2022, right? That's a midterm election year.
Yeah, I think given, particularly given kind of the increase in coronavirus cases lately with the Delta variant, lawmakers want to provide as much economic assistance to people as quickly as possible. So there's definitely a desire to act sooner rather than later. And as you mentioned, the midterm elections are, you know, November 2022, and Democrats will definitely want a win that they can show to their constituents. And the closer and closer you get to Election Day, the harder it is to pass legislation. So I do think there is motivation among lawmakers to try to get this done sooner rather than later.
Thanks, Naomi. That is Naomi Jagoda, tax and budget reporter at The Hill. Coming up next, the baseball team that thinks it's above being booed for a lousy performance. Do you love seafood when you're out to eat but never make it for yourself at home? Yeah, me too. But the key to restaurant quality at home starts with high-quality seafood and simple techniques from Wild Alaskan Company. With Wild Alaskan Company, you're getting high-quality, sustainably sourced, wild-caught seafood delivered right to your door. Choose from salmon, whitefish, or a combination. Money back if you're not happy. I went with the Wild Combo Box. Fired it up on the grill with a little garlic, lemon, and parsley. It was like sitting at some dockside restaurant in the last frontier. Each piece of fish was individually wrapped and labeled. Plus, the packaging can be composted. Wild Alaskan Company seafood is always wild, never farmed or modified, and contains no antibiotics. It's how nature intended it. And right now, you can get $15 off your first box of premium seafood when you visit wildalaskancompany.com/Gordon. That's wildalaskancompany.com/Gordon for $15 off your first box. wildalaskancompany.com/Gordon.
Today's Mic Drop is brought to you by Dell. For your small business needs, call a Dell Technologies advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Monday. It's time now for the Mic Drop with this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, here we are on a heavy news Monday, and as always, we try to find the less consequential stories to tell you about here to help lighten the mood. This would seem to be right up that alley. We know that fans can be tough on players when they don't perform, and booing is a time-honored way for paying customers to make their displeasure known. Rarely, though, do the players boo back. That's apparently what's happening in New York, as a couple of Mets players are sick and tired of fans booing the team's poor performance. Star infielder Javier Baez, who's only been with the team for a month since being traded over from the Cubs, explained at a press conference yesterday that the thumbs-down gesture that he and other Mets players have been giving fans after they get a big hit is actually a retaliation for fans booing them when they don't come through. As you can imagine, Mets management isn't thrilled about this turn of events, with team president Sandy Alderson saying in a statement that this type of engagement with fans will not be tolerated.
Ah. Mets players sick and tired of fans booing. Mets fans sick and tired of Mets losing.
Yes. Yeah. They've just been awful. They've been unwatchable this month, so the boos are well-deserved.
In the month of August, the Mets won 8 games and lost 19.
Yeah.
If you can't admit that you deserve to be booed,
yeah,
you know, you don't understand, I think, what it is to be an athlete.
Yes.
Whose fans pay your salary, essentially.
I'm curious about what the reaction is going to be when he comes up to the plate next time in front of the home fans.
We make millions. You can't boo us. That's the message, right?
Yes.
Wow. Oh,
and we know, Gordon, that air travel is fraught with worry for many during the pandemic. So while we're trying to stay away from viruses, the last thing we need being introduced into the plane is salmonella. That's why the TSA felt the need to put out an impromptu PSA after a pile of raw chicken was seen traversing an airport luggage conveyor with no container and no ice. The TSA reposted the video, which was taken in Seattle, writing a punny response about this being a personal foul on the carousel. The post continues, "Don't wing your travel packing. In order to keep from ruffling any feathers, meat should be properly packaged. Ice or dry ice is permitted to keep the flock chilled."
Always good stuff by the TSA.
Yes. Yeah.
Very
sure.
Funny. Now, if you have an Instagram account, the TSA is worth following.
For
it's
sure.
Funny.
Yeah. I mean, it looked like it was packed at one point.
Yeah.
That was packed in a cooler. It sort of had kind of a box shape.
I agree.
To it.
Yes.
But somehow the cooler went away.
Yeah.
And the chicken was on the conveyor belt by itself. I don't know how it got placed there. You know, how it got dumped there in such a nice, neat little pile.
May I float this theory?
Okay, sure.
The chicken was just dumped in a rectangular block-shaped cardboard box.
Yes.
And then ice was put in it.
Okay.
Or it was submitted as a giant block of frozen chicken.
Right.
And eventually, as it began to thaw, it wrecked the cardboard box.
Fell through the bottom,
basically. Something like that,
yeah.
And came out in this shape.
That sounds like a half-plausible explanation there.
As somebody on Twitter said last week, Mike, this can gag a maggot off a gut wagon.
All right.
I don't know.
I mean, I can't disagree with that.
They posted that in response to something you and I were talking about, and I love that phrase so much that I promised on Twitter I would use it. So there it is.
Nice.
That can gag a maggot off a gut wagon.
Congratulations on working that in.
13 minutes in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Innovation. Resilience. Agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Thanks for being with us. As Hurricane Ida made landfall on the Louisiana coastline, Waffle House's projected to be in the Category 4 storm's path have closed. Why does that matter? Well, it's usually a solid predictor of how destructive severe weather can be. For those not familiar with the popular southern restaurant, Waffle House has been known for staying open 24/7, regardless of extreme weather. USA Today says the restaurant's reputation for remaining open resulted in former FEMA administrator Craig Fugate coining the Waffle House Index in 2011. When a tornado hit Joplin, Missouri that year, two Waffle Houses stayed open despite the tornado that caused $2.8 billion worth of damage and killed 158 people. The Waffle House Index has three tiers, green, yellow, and red. Green means the store will operate fully. Yellow means the restaurants will be open, but the menu or power is limited. Red means the store will be closed. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on this morning. Once again, here's Rasa Kay.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Over a million customers are without power in Louisiana after Hurricane Ida struck as an extremely dangerous Category 4 storm. It made landfall near Port Fourchon as one of the strongest hurricanes to hit Louisiana in the state's recorded history. LaForche Parish Sheriff spokesman Brendan Mathern spoke to ABC News.
We expect to see massive damage on the scale of what we saw for Katrina and Gustav in 05 and 08 and probably on a much worse level.
Number two.
Entergy Louisiana is warning some customers could lack electricity for weeks. New Orleans Sewage and Water Board reports sewage pump stations have lost power, raising the risk of backups into homes. And AT&T is waiving overage charges to provide unlimited talk, text, and data for Louisiana and Mississippi customers through Saturday.
Number three.
U.S. anti-missile systems stopped rockets fired at American troops today in Kabul. Yesterday, a U.S. drone strike killed another suspected suicide car bomber believed to be preparing to strike Kabul Airport. Spiking temperatures and increasing winds are adding to challenges faced by firefighters battling blazes across Northern California. Thick smoke sent tourists packing from the Lake Tahoe resort region over the weekend.
One of the days, the sky turned black. It was like about 4:30 in the afternoon. The street lamps are coming on. It looked like something out of Wizard of Oz, like really scary stuff.
That's South Lake Tahoe resident Jim McCall. In Southern California, a crowd of several hundred people gathered at the Santa Monica Pier Sunday to protest proposed COVID vaccination mandates. Many held American flags and signs proclaiming no jabs for jobs and stop the medical tyranny. The group New Jersey Parents for Virtual Choice is pushing Governor Phil Murphy to let school districts establish fully virtual learning as an option for families concerned about COVID exposure. Their petition has garnered over 24,000 signatures as of this morning. The team from Taylor North has delivered the first Little League World Series title for the state of Michigan since 1959. Michigan beat Ohio 5-2, both from the Great Lakes, marking the only time clubs from the same region played in the championship. It's because there were no international teams competing this year because of COVID travel restrictions.
All right. Thank you, Rasa. 6 minutes now in front of the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. Start fall with everything to do business better during Dell Technologies Labor Day event. Save up to 45% on select business PCs with Windows 10 Pro. Power your workday with savings on Dell servers, monitors, docks, and other accessories, plus free shipping on everything. Do more with modern devices and Windows 10 Pro. Call 877-ASK-DELL for a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL for business specials during Dell's Labor Day event. Thanks for being with us. Bars and restaurants around the country are paying tribute to the 13 U.S. service members killed by a suicide bomber in Afghanistan. In New England, at the Westminster Brewing Company in Massachusetts, there were 13 beers lined up at the bar on Saturday. A sign read, "Your sacrifice will never be forgotten." The display was still on the bar yesterday. In Hampton, New Hampshire, a similar scene played out at Smutty Nose Brewing Company and the Galley Hatch Restaurant. Also at Rick's Food and Spirits in Kingston, New Hampshire, and at Fairgrounds Pizza and Pub in Cornish, Maine. Outside Cleveland, Nico's Bar and Gyros in North Royalton, Ohio, posted a photo on Facebook showing a table with 13 beers on it with a placard that simply says reserved. Every beer sold there between now and September 11th reserves $1 for donation to the families. In Idaho, the staff at Sid's Garage in two locations, Boise and Meridian,
reserve 13 seats at a center table and placed a beer at each seat in memory of those who were lost. That'll do it for this hour. For Rasa Kay, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, GEICO makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. GEICO.com. Easy.